Please turn, if you like, to Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 to 11. Put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you: fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. In these you once walked when you lived in them. But now put them all away: anger, wrath, malice, slander, and foul talk from your mouth. Do not lie to one another, seeing that you have put off the old nature with its practices, and you have put on the new nature, which is being renewed in the knowledge after the image of its creator. Here there cannot be Greek and Jew, circumcised or uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free man, but Christ is all and in all.
Luke 19, verses 1 to 10. He entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was the chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see Jesus. And when Jesus came to that place, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house." So he hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they grumbled, He has gone to be the guest of a man who is a sinner." And Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, "Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone for anything, I restore it fourfold." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost."
Last year, Bill organized a Guess Who's Coming to Dinner event. The premise was that you signed up to either be a dinner host or a dinner guest. But the organizer was Bill, who decided who was going where. And so the host did not know who was coming until the doorbell rang and you opened the door, and then you saw whose faces were there. Four or five surprised guests ready to come in and sit down around your table. And it was then that you knew what your arrangement would look like. In our case, it was Lorraine, Dee Dee, Grace, and Mike. I suppose that the Zacchaeus story is a version of that. But more than likely, Zacchaeus did not have dinner plans on his mind at all. At first, he probably was more curious than anything. He had heard the reports, heard the advanced scouting reports that had been creating the Jericho buzz. So he was out and about in the streets checking it out. And from the vantage point of a tree limb, he saw Jesus approaching. And it was Jesus who did the asking, "Guess who's coming to dinner?" "Me. I'm coming over. I'm coming to your house." And he did. Zacchaeus and Jesus were there, and who knows who else? We do not know. What we do know is that there were watchers, and that the watchers were an unhappy lot. And what we also know is that a transformation took place that day. The Bible calls it a salvation, this transformation from a self-serving, greedy man to generosity, and it was called a salvation, and it was marvelous. Now, the fun thing would be is to place ourselves in Zacchaeus's shoes and to ask, if that had been me, if Jesus had spotted me lurking somewhere in the middle of my day, in the teacher's lounge, near the kitchen sink, if Jesus had noticed me on my commute or rummaging through the veggie section of Aldi's and said, "I'm coming over to your house. Coming right now." How would we feel about that? Would there be a surge of guilt arising in our hearts? Would our minds be racing between, oh crud, why is Jesus coming over to my house? And I don't have anything thawed, and we are clean out of Sprite. What does Jesus drink? Where would our minds go if we knew that? And what if Jesus had transformation on his mind? How would we feel about that? How is one to feel in the advance of a salvation? Can we prepare for it? How will it go? Will it hurt? And another fun thing would be to place ourselves in the shoes of the watchers, the grumbling watcher people group, this group who seemingly have their act together, totally. Positional righteous watchers who are acting as if their acts are together. As you know, as most of you know, I grew up in the Mennonite orbit from day one. Mennonite since September 23, 1953. I still carry with me the Mennonite Bible verses and the importance of thinking that went along with them. Thou shalt not work on the Sabbath, neither shalt thou go bowling, even though it is fun. I absorbed these things at a very, very young age. Do not be conformed to this world was another verse. And I do not know if I would want to call do not be conformed to this world a Mennonite mantra, but it comes close. For I heard it young, and I heard it preached. I heard it quoted oftener still. To this day, it still swirls around in my head as a theological earworm. Do not be conformed to this world had me checking the last names of people in my church and my clothing styles and whether my car color broke some kind of norm and the right girls to date and when to bale hay and when not to bale hay, why a piano was okay in the living room of our house with my mother playing it but not okay at church, why we sang in church the songs that had to be sung slowly. Reverently was the word my dad used to explain it to me, not fast and jazzed up the way the world does its music, the way Mark does his music. Do not be conformed was the mantra, and it covered a whole lot of ground. Marble games at elementary recess became the early testing ground for my faith. Playing for funsies was acceptable. Playing for keepsies, nixies, and no changies was frowned upon, coming a little too close to the world of gambling, and we should not conform to that. And this mantra populated the dinner conversation one Sunday after church when Pastor Jonas went from a plain black jacket to blue lapels and a tie. And when the women at church began one by one to drop their white coverings from their heads, was this now worldly? Were we now on some slippery slope towards becoming conformed to the habits of the world? Not only is it a theological earworm of the mind, it often came with the sort of visual wagging of the finger and the to and fro shaking of the head. Now, what I just told you is personal and Mennonite to me. I do not expect it to be the experience of others, and I do not want to in any way suggest that it was all bad. I can only imagine the kinds of things that it protected me from. There is a place for good behaviors, certainly is, certainly is. However, what I do wonder about to this day is what might my Mennonite orbit have been like had it spent more time, had it been given more attention to the what comes next phrase of Romans 12:2, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. Equal time to, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. For the last 2 weeks, we have entertained three questions. As Dustin has mentioned this morning, question number one comes into sharper focus. Am I as mature as I'm going to get? Am I as mature as I'm ever going to get? It's a kind of Zacchaeus question. or maybe even a kind of Zacchaeus watcher question. Is my act as much together as I think it is? Am I available for transformation? Can Jesus come to my house? Can Jesus come into our church? Can Jesus even transform the theological earworms bouncing around in the circuitry of my brain? This morning, in addition to hearing about the Zacchaeus encounter, we also heard from an old church letter. A letter written to church people, not unlike us. This letter did not come to the city of Colossae church people in chapter and verse form as we now have it. It came in the form of a letter to be read aloud in their gathering, all of it, the whole mother load, read all at once. What we heard read for us was only a partial snippet of the whole letter. Two Sundays ago, as we began to unpack this idea of an open and mutually transforming church, we took an extended notice of Christina Cleveland's work of what she calls the hidden forces of disunity in churches. But even beyond churches, what our brains do to file people around us into categories, into folders, using stereotypes to form people into their groups, which is good and easy for the brain, but bad and hard for the church. And I don't want to spend all of our time on it this morning, but I do want to point out the goings-on in the last thing that we heard. If you are following along in your Bible or device, it can be pinpointed at the spot we have marked in our Bibles, Colossians 3:11. It's called a renewal, and in that renewal, people groups are coming together. Greeks and Jews, Scythians and barbarians. And can we even imagine who went by the name barbarian, what they looked like, what they ate, what they drove? But they are here, the barbarians. I once heard it explained that the barbar part of barbarian is close to what we would now call blah, blah, blah. Kind of like the teacher's voice in the old Charlie Brown cartoons. Wah, 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 wah. Or like the delivery truck driver who showed up at our Harrisonburg worksite one morning, got out of his truck, and with a deep woods drawl, complete with chew packed into his cheek, began to speak.
"Why do I want you to do that?"
And I said, "Excuse me?" And he chew drawled a second time, and I said, "I'm sorry." And he chew drawled a third time, and I went and got Kendall. Something was being said, but it was unintelligible. The Colossian church had barbars in it. The barbars were there. They are all there, Greeks and Jews and barbarians and Scythians and slaves and free. Six people groups and counting, six very distinct people groups who had no other earthly reason to be together in one place, but they were. And it is called a renewal, and it says Christ was all in all. So in the divine activity, there is a combining going on. People's minds are being transformed. Okay, that. What we also heard as our morning reading from Colossians was taking place was a kind of list. Things to put to death, things to get rid of, like anger and malice and slander and abusive language from your mouth, they all make this list. And nowadays, because it's 2018, we not only have ways of saying abusive things with our mouths, but we also have ways of spewing anger and malice and slander and abusive language via social media. From the silence of our laptops, slung in the moment, flung at anyone whose heart might be listening, in the quiet glow of our laptop moments comes cyberbullying, Facebook snark and crank, from me to you. So how do we translate first century Colossians into our 2018 digital world? And more to the point might be, how will we Mennonites find our stride between the balance between nonconformity and transformation? I have a quote that some of you will no doubt recognize, but only some of us. And I know I'm kind of preaching to the Mennonite choir here. But here's the quote. True evangelical faith cannot lay dormant, but manifests itself in all righteousness and works of love. It clothes the naked, feeds the hungry, consoles the afflicted, shelters the miserable, aids and consoles all the oppressed, returns good for evil, serves those who injure it, prays for those who persecutes it. Does that quote sound familiar to anyone? Who wrote it? Of course. The namesake of our tradition. This quote has become a kind of Mennonite mission statement, and over the years it has spawned a full network of service, from Mennonite Central Committee to its networks of CVRC and thrift shop support, to Mennonite disaster service, to voluntary service units, to SCADs and SCADs of mission agencies, to restorative justice efforts and peace building initiatives and health work and mental health work and 10,000 villages. The list is a long one and it's still growing. It is a very, 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 very good list. That Menno Simons quote stands at the very core of how we Mennonites, how we understand ourselves. It's how we make sense of ourselves and our Christian purpose in the wide world. But do you know what? Are we aware that the Menno Simons quote that I read is only a partial? It's only a redaction, a reduction, an edited segment of a larger whole? Are we aware that there is part of Menno's quote that often gets left out? Do we know that Menno did not begin with his famous quote, clothe the naked, feed the hungry, comfort the sorrowful, shelter the destitute, aids and console? He did not lead with that. No. But instead, Menno began with, true evangelical faith cannot lie dormant. It dies to flesh and blood. It destroys all lusts and forbidden desires. Hey, Mennonite choir, can we still do transformation? Now back to the letter we call Colossians. Back to the list we find there, and a few comments added in for our consideration. When we place ourselves in closer proximity to this list, do you consider yourself a finished product? Menno sums it up and calls it all lust and forbidden desires. Galatians calls it fornication, that is, sexual stuff, impurity, passion, evil desires, but also in this list are greed, anger, wrath, malice, slander, and abusive language. Do you consider yourselves having fully outgrown all of these things? Do we consider ourselves persons spit-polished Christians? Paul, who is writing this letter, who is writing this church letter, uses a strong pay-attention word. He says, idolatry, which not only suggests a powerful force that ensnares us, but more likely a power that has already captured us without our knowing it. We think we are on the outside looking in at idolatry, but more often we are already within the forces of idolatry looking out, looking for help. Listen in on some commentary I found this week. In the U.S., we live in a culture that inundates us with advertising designed to keep us conformed and tethered to its world. The marketing media industry spends billions of dollars annually to flood televisions, websites, billboards, email, and other regular email. They even intrude on gas pump screens and or the screens of credit card readers. They seek to define us not so much as persons with names, but as consumer units on a spreadsheet with a bottom line. Advertising is done to create felt needs, the desire to consume, and the desire to keep on consuming. Doesn't matter who. Colossians uses the word fornication, and again, more than likely, we think we're on the outside of that looking in. Fornication is about sexual stuff, which connected with a blog I read this week, written by a woman who calls her blog Meditations by a Traveling Nun, who said, In our present culture, we are fast losing the ability to be social without being sexual. To love means to make love. We are being programmed to think that. Which got me thinking back to Talia, of all people. At Lakeview, before one of our youth conventions, as a fundraiser, the adults made up a list of things they wanted done. And the youth could go grab a chore off that list and be paid to do it. I've always needed help gathering firewood and was surprised that it was scrawny Talia who volunteered to help me. Now, Talia is a bright, was a bright, scrappy, laughy, give it right back to ya, 98-pound soaking wet young girl. She named my white four-wheel drive Patsy, and off to the woods we went to split firewood and gather it for the day, several loads worth for the better part of a Saturday, back and forth, she and I between woodshed and woods. And oh my, that was then, but we can't do that now. Things like that should not be done anymore. We have to be more careful now, much more careful about such things, for there have been instances of great damage that has been done. Because like it or not, we are swimming in an outside, inside force called sexuality, and it is a modern idol. And it is true what the traveling nun said. We are fast losing the ability to be social creatures with each other without it being sexual. Fornication, greed, and anger are all only three on the Colossian hit list. There are more than that powerful forces at work around us. Do not be conformed to this world has been a Mennonite mantra for years. It is a good scriptural impulse for certain, for sure. We have been a little slower to connect the transformation part, divine transformation, the mercy of God available for the renewing of our minds. And we have been slower still to imagine the person sitting next to us in church, a person so unlike ourselves, but joining us on that same quest towards transformation. An open and mutually transforming Mennonite church. Can it be? Can it be beautiful?